This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It has been a mystery that has haunted Lake Huron since the Civil War. What happened to the Keystone State? The wooden steamer set out from Detroit, bound for Milwaukee, around November 9, 1861. She never made it. And no one knew the Keystone State had run into trouble until wreckage washed up on the shore near Lexington. Thanks to my next guest, the Keystone State is a mystery no longer. She's been found, albeit in nearly 175 feet of water. David Trotter is a veteran shipwreck hunter. Through his company, Undersea Research Associates, he has combed through nearly 2,000 miles of Great Lakes bottomland and found nearly 100 lost vessels. David Trotter, welcome to Stateside.
Oh, thank you.
So tell us, what was known about the Keystone State? What do we know about that final voyage?
Well, we know that she got up off of what is called the Thumb of Michigan, the tip of the thumb where Port Austin is located, and we know that she was sighted at that point, and she was considered to be disabled and in rolling conditions, meaning, of course, that she was trying to make her way up the lake, caught in this gale, and in this gale come across from the west across toward the east and was buffeting her tremendously along the side of the ship, so she was rocking and rolling. Now, the side wheels at that point would begin to come in and out of the water, further making control of the vessel much more difficult. And literally, she disappeared for 10 or 12 days before there was some remains found floating on the lake and eventually further down toward Port Huron. So there was a big window of 8 to 10, 12 days where nobody had any idea what had happened to the Keystone State.
And there were 33 on board.
Yes, there were the captain, Captain Travers, and 32 crew that were on board that intended to, of course, make Milwaukee. Now, our discovery of her answered some questions but left others unanswered. And certainly we now realize that she had a tremendous fight to try and save her life as they continued up north against this gale force storm. And in doing so, she no doubt began to suffer some damage. And I can just, we can picture what happened at that point based on accounts that have happened to other vessels that we're aware of, that they would have been stoking the boilers at all costs to keep the fire going so that the paddle wheels would turn, and also so that the bilge pumps would continue to work to pour water back out that no doubt was leaking inside the hull. And finally, at some point, they would have realized that their cargo was causing them trouble, and you would have had much of the crew trying to pitch all of the cargo over the side in an effort to make the ship more seaworthy. And eventually, the water would have gotten to the fireboxes that stoked the boilers, and the fire would have went out, and then they were really at the mercy of this very horrific storm. And they would have all climbed up on the upper decks and started to throw parts of the ship overboard in an effort to be able to jump and cling to them. And finally, when the ship disappeared and sunk very abruptly, there would have been what we call the uppers, or the more fragile parts of the ship that would have floated to the surface. And crew and the captain may well have grabbed a hold of those in an effort to save themselves. But literally, the cold water of November would have eventually sapped their strength, and they all perished. And in fact, we never did find it. We did not find any human remains, nor were there any found back in 1861.
You really paint a story that is, it gives me goosebumps as you talk. I'm sure all of us listening are you know, thinking of movies we've seen, whether it be Titanic or The Perfect Storm, but that idea of being out there in the middle of a maritime storm and there is nothing, and there's nothing there for you.
Yeah, there is. The ship is their only hope because they have no lifeboats. There's no other ships that see them. And as they were heading north into this storm, the paddle wheels, as I mentioned, or the side wheels, of course, didn't operate particularly well as the ship was rolling and pitching. So she was actually getting pushed further out into the middle of Lake Huron. And the further she got pushed out, the more graphic and difficult the wave conditions would have been. So she was fighting a losing battle as she could not control herself and come in closer to shore for protection. And eventually, of course, that cost her demise. but nobody knew where she went. It was a 50-mile run between the last time she was seen and where we actually located her.
Really? So when did you find her and how?
We found her in early July, and I was doing some what we call searching or rec hunting, survey work that looks for things that are on the bottom that are missing. And I've done this for about 35 years as an avocation. It's a chance to document marine history, to share the excitement of discovering exploration, and really make people much more aware of our Michigan history regarding the Great Lakes.
So you found her, and she was about 40 to 50 miles from where she was last seen. So it was quite an agonizing fight, wasn't it?
Well, it certainly was. And certainly we know today where she's at, but one can picture that information, of course, you know, not available a year ago. So if you did all your research, you would assume that she was off of the Thumb. And I have done extensive survey off the Thumb and fully expected that I could have found her 20 years ago instead of finding her this last July.
And where exactly did you find her, David?
About 30 miles northeast of Harrisville or off. Another way to say it is generally off of Alpena.
Oh, boy.
To give you a sense of where that's at compared to where the Thumb of Michigan is when she was last sighted.
I have to ask you, it's one of my few chances to really talk to someone who has discovered a lost ship, has seen it. What does that feel like? What thoughts are going through your mind, first of all, when your sonar device says there's something here, and then you actually see that ship that's been, in this case, lost since 1861?
Well, certainly when a target appears on the side scan, we are fairly confident that it may be what we're looking for, but you're never too sure. We call them an anomaly, meaning that it has characteristics of the type of thing we're looking for, the object, in this instance a shipwreck, and it's only upon when we close in and expand the detail by closing in onto the site and making the whole thing expand on our screen that we get a greater sense of what she might be. And in this instance, we saw these magnificent side wheels standing upright on the floor of Lake Huron, and we realized that there was only one ship left in Lake Huron that was missing that would have been a sidewheel steamer this magnificent size, and it would be the Keystone State. So you put a team of divers down the next few weeks, and they're the first to touch this site and to swim back into history over after 150 years. And it's quite an emotional experience for everybody that participates.
What kind of emotions?
Well, you realize that there was a tremendous struggle and that there were people whose future was very bleak as they attempted to continue to keep this ship floating. And you now realize that this is a site that represents a very significant loss to those people as well as the families back in 1861.
Great Lakes underwater explorer David Trotter. All the details on his latest discovery, the Keystone State, can be found on his website. It's shipwreck1, and that's the number 1.com. David Trotter, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today on Stateside.
Well, thank you for calling.